When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Quentin Tarantino's final film will no longer be The Movie Critic. The Zendaya-led Challengers tops the box office. And Martin Scorsese and Leo DiCaprio might make a Frank Sinatra film. Let's get into this week's movie news.
What's up, movie friends? Welcome back to Raiders of the Lost Podcast, the ultimate film and TV podcast. We know many of you missed us last Sunday, and we were not part of your normal Sunday routine without movie news, but we are back in action. We were gone in Boston, but it's happy to be back in one of our favorite weekly episodes to go over box office, casting, trailers, movie announcements, everything that has to do with the industry. And there's a lot to go over. We're going to talk about some stuff that we missed last week because we were out of town.
I think movie news might just be my favorite episode every week because they're
fun.
Always fun.
And it's vibing, man.
Yeah,
we hear
the news. You talk a little smack. It's a lot of fun. But let's get into the box office, everybody. Luca Guadagnino's Challengers has decimated the competition, taken over the top spot at the box office with $15 million domestic opening weekend for this tennis drama.
This is actually huge. I believe it's Guadagnino's biggest opening. And also, this was a real test for Zendaya's star power as a film star. This is her leading a film. She's the face of the poster. She is the draw. Theatrical release. Not streaming, not Netflix, not Prime.
Not really an ensemble.
Yeah, this is where, I mean, the two other actors are well known, but they are nothing in comparison to her star power.
They are nothing! Zendaya!
they live in Zendaya's shadow,
as we all do.
So I was interested to see how this film would perform. I'm going to see it tonight, and I can't wait to watch it, because this is a real test. Most of the films she's been in, they're ensembles, she's a supporting actor, whether it be Spider-Man, Dune, Malcolm and Marie was a Netflix release, so this was her big test, and she crushed it. $15 million domestic for a tennis drama. That exceeded my expectations. I was expecting this movie to pull at 10 the most, but it looks like people came out to see her, and I'm happy to see a Luca Guadagnino movie making a good amount of money. I believe this already made more than Bones and All.
That's pretty incredible. Yeah, Bones and All was about $10, $15 million total at the box office, I think, off the top of my head.
So it's proof that she is a draw.
Absolutely, she's a draw. Next up in second place, we have Unsung Hero, got $8 million at the domestic box office. Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, third place at $7 million. It has surpassed $500 million globally, which puts it, I think, top three in the current MonsterVerse for Legendary and Warner Bros.
They make money, man.
Civil War added another $6.6 million to its domestic box office run. Abigail, it opened this past weekend, pulled in $5 million at the domestic box office. A little low for, I think, what they were expecting.
It's a second weekend.
Second weekend.
Yes.
So it's pretty good for
a
second weekend.
Yes, you fucked up.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, Guy Ritchie's latest film, which Anthony saw and I'm seeing this week, I'm excited about, pulled domestically $4 million at the box office, a bit of an underperformer for such an excellent film.
Also second weekend.
Second weekend.
Yes.
Kung Fu Panda still...
Also, and the reason for Gentlemanly Warfare's low box office, it has not even opened in Canada.
Oh, okay.
So the Canadian market hasn't even released it for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Oh, Canada. Kung Fu Panda at $3.5 million at the box office. Ghostbusters, another $3 million. Dune Part 2, another $1.8 million domestically, has now passed $700 million at the domestic box office.
You did it, guys. That's what I guessed it would make. $700.
Yeah, you nailed it. Alien, which had a re-release and I'm seeing today in theaters, pulled $1.7 million at this re-release box office.
Nice job for Disney.
And then Boy Kills the World pulled $1.6 million in a massive bomb. It's opening weekend. This action film starring Bill Skarsgård was a huge disappointment. $1.6 million at 2,000 theaters.
This is the, it could be one of the bigger bombs of the year for sure, and it was a big disappointment. 2,000 theaters, you want for a decent opening to be closer to $10 million. I was expecting this film to not perform that well, but this is actually way lower than my expectations. It seemed like with Boy Kills World, audiences were not interested in it. And I would say I love the concept, but the trailer never really captivated me or pulled me in. Like, I didn't go see it this past weekend. I want to see Challengers instead. Also, it's a bad release date. You have Civil War, Godzilla Kong, and then Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Those are a lot of the same audiences of people that would see Boy Kills World. So I think they chose a really bad release date. If they had released it maybe 2 weeks ago before these horror films came out, or maybe if they released it in the next couple of weeks, it would have done a little bit better. But I would say the late April release set it up for failure. Yeah, I feel like it's hard to compete with any of these films.
I'm trying to find the budget because I'm sure it was at least $20
million. It looks like a pretty decent budget, about $15 to $20 million would be my guess, because Skarsgård's a big name. You got a couple of other high-profile actors in supporting roles. It looks like they have a ton of sets in production and lots of stunt work. So it looks like a pretty hefty budget. My guess is $15 to $20 million.
We were actually talking about why this performed so poorly, and I think we came up with some good answers. The marketing campaign wasn't terrific, and like I think you said, maybe people didn't understand what this movie was from the marketing campaign.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bold move to make your character mute, but then have a different actor's voice inside the head narrating everything, and H. John Benjamin, who's a great voice actor. You all know him from Archer as well as some other stuff. Maybe that voice turned people off. Because I know when I saw the trailer for the first time, I thought it was an interesting idea for the last voice he heard becomes the voice inside of his head, which is from a video game that he used to play. But did the voice fit the tone of the movie and the character? I don't know. I haven't seen the film. And also, maybe it felt a little too much like John Wick and Hunger Games. Maybe people are just a little burnt out from both those franchises. Maybe burnt out from Hunger Games, but also John Wick carbon copies to an extent. Not exactly carbon copies, but the style of John Wick. Maybe people aren't too big on movies that look like it. I don't know, you know.
And all, I mean, there's also a lot of audience overlap. I forgot about Abigail. That definitely has an audience overlap with people who would seek Boy Kills World.
Yeah, so rated R.
I think the studio chose a bad release date for this film more than anything. But also, I think even if it came out in a less packed weekend, I don't think audiences would have really turned out in a huge
way. I forgot it was coming out.
Same.
I honestly forgot about this movie.
I went to AMC the other day, and I saw a huge banner for it. I was like, oh, yeah, that movie. I forgot about that movie.
I think just the marketing campaign, and it's just maybe people just... It didn't latch on to anyone,
yeah.
Which is too bad because it's a directorial debut, unfortunately, and Sam Raimi produced it.
But speaking of a success, though, Civil War has grossed $55 million domestically at the box office. So it's doing really well. It looks to be, it could become A24's most highest grossing film.
Well, it already is, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Yeah, it broke $100 million, I thought. Globally or no?
I'm not sure, actually.
All right, Everything Everywhere All at Once was 130 total. Let me double check.
$130 million, I think.
Not everything but cakes. Google. Google, come on. You let me down. You're embarrassing
me. I love cakes.
Everything Everywhere All at Once box office.
What we got?
Is 143.
That was close.
Woo. Woo. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
For a $20 million budget. And then Civil War box office 2024, if we're at $64 million total. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Never mind.
So it has a lot of... I'm not sure if we'll hit that because it doesn't have the word of mouth of Everything Everywhere.
It seems like everything will just be unable to be dethroned for A24.
For now, yeah.
Let's move on to some other news. We are making a movie this summer. We're going to launch our crowdfunding campaign on Tuesday, so be on the lookout for that. We're trying to raise funds for it. It's called One Click. We're very excited about it. We're going to do some cool stuff like blow up a car. It's going to be a SAG production as well. With that comes some extra costs and regulations that we have to abide by, but we're ecstatic about it. We're going to film hopefully in June, but the campaign to raise funds for it launches on Tuesday. Look for it on all of our sites. Give what you can, if you can. There's some cool perks that we're offering. We're stoked about it. We would love for you to help make it possible.
It's going to be epic. Stay tuned on Tuesday. Now, in terms of new releases, the biggest new release this upcoming week that we highly recommend you check out for fans of action, The Fall Guy, is finally dropping later this week, so definitely check it out. Put it on your radar. We really enjoyed that film.
They've had a great marketing campaign.
Oh, yeah, fantastic.
Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling, obviously, they're high-exposure A-listers. They did bits on SNL, but also Gosling and director David Leitch and the stunt guys, they've been doing all sorts of cool promo videos.
Yeah, the carpool karaoke thing. Yeah,
carpool, like stunt karaoke. Carpool stunts instead of carpool karaoke, but blending them together was a lot of fun. So I think that movie's doing a great job with their marketing campaign, getting people excited for this film, as well as Challengers, of course, just came out, so check that out.
Yeah, it's just a fun time. It also re-releases Aliens in theaters right now, as well as The Mummy, which is going to be one of our upcoming episodes this week.
Tomorrow on Monday.
Tomorrow. So watch The Mummy tonight, and then watch our episode tomorrow on it.
And it was a banger.
It was a great episode.
A lot of fun, because I love that movie. It's so good. It's so good. It's
fucking great.
All right, let's get into all of the news.
The news. So we have a huge story. Now, this is a week or so old, but we were in Boston when it dropped, so we're actually going to talk about it now. Quentin Tarantino has officially canceled his supposed 10th film, The Movie Critic, and will no longer be making the film. They were originally slated to begin production later this year. However, he decided to scrap the project altogether. Now, there are a couple of reasons that I'm sure tied into this. First of all, maybe he felt that it wasn't going to be good enough for him to go out on. And second of all, I know that a lot of people are judging him a little too harshly online. Like, hey, relax, man. It's just a movie. Nobody cares. And surely he does care. But I remember he did an interview about Inglourious Basterds. And he said he was not going to make the film at one point because he couldn't find an actor for Hans Landa. Mm-hmm. And for him, there'd be no point in making that film if he couldn't find an actor who could handle that role.
Yeah, imagine if we didn't get that movie. Holy crap.
And so he also didn't want to originally release The Hateful Eight. So he's played around with not making a film that he was heavily in pre-production on. It's happened twice almost. He ended up making those films. But my guess is maybe he couldn't find the right actor for whatever this lead role is. Or maybe he felt that this isn't going to be quite up to par with my quality of work of output.
And I guess you could take the perspective of, is he putting himself in a box where maybe no movie will ever be good enough to go out on, and he's always going to lull over it? Or from his perspective, he's probably had 20 scripts ideas and that he's fully written out that he never turned into a movie.
Yeah, you know, he's probably had
dozens and dozens of movies we've never even heard of that he's written, or stories he's written that he hasn't turned into movies that he almost did. So maybe because of social media and the internet age, we hear all this news. But I mean, in the 90s and early 2000s, I'm sure there's a ton of stories in movies that he didn't. I mean, he almost made a Star Trek movie. No one talks about that anymore.
Yeah.
That fell through.
Nobody talks about that anymore.
So I'm not surprised that he's moving on to something else. But maybe we were missing out on a Tarantino classic. But it is what it is. It's his career. It's his life. He can do whatever the hell he wants.
Also, the news report came out that he was teasing around with the idea of having characters from his other films show up in this one. Most notably, Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, Rick Dalton.
Yeah, having cameos in this. I honestly don't mind. And I don't think it's pretentious or egotistical for him at all, because he has the right to do whatever he wants for his final film. And also, he has the pedigree to be like, he can fucking not make a movie if he doesn't want to. If he wants to go out guns blazing as on high level, he's earned that.
Yeah, and the thing with Tarantino, I always look at, he's maybe the only director where all of his movies kind of feel like they're in their own universe, their own world, that they can all sort of be connected in different ways, whether it's period piece from Hateful Eight or Kill Bill, more contemporary, or Pulp Fiction, 90s. It feels like they're all sort of in the same world.
Yeah.
So it would be fun to see them all like crop up as cameos. I wouldn't have a problem with that at all.
And I mean, he'll go out and he'll have 10 great films and it'll be legendary.
He already is. He's already a legend.
Yeah, but man, I think it would be, it's, and plus he's going to keep making stuff after that.
Trust in Tarantino.
Yeah.
We got some controversial news right here. So Rotten Tomatoes news. A rep for movie directors reveals that Rotten Tomatoes scores of a director's past movies are now the first thing producers look at when directors are pitched to them. Now, can we take a moment to look at the devastation that Rotten Tomatoes has caused to the movie industry?
Oh, absolutely.
Look, this is insane. Now, all people care about, all producers care about, and studios care about, is what your scores are on Rotten
fresh
Tomatoes.
Or rotten.
From objective, biased critics who have sometimes agendas against you if you're a specific director, or just maybe don't like you, or this is ridiculous that this much power has been given to movie critics.
And even the misconception of what the rating even is. It's not an overall grade of the film. It's just the percent of critics who said it was good.
It's sad, man.
So
Rotten Tomatoes has destroyed a significant part of the film industry, I think.
Honestly, the best barometer of quality is IMDb.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you get 100,000 ratings on IMDb from users. And then they also have Metacritic right there, which is a good critic barometer. But IMDb, I think, is the best indicator of the quality of a film.
I think so, too. When you have a good amount of ratings, 20,000 is meh. But if you can get, like, to 75,000, 100,000 ratings on IMDb, you get a legit score. Obviously, yeah. There'll be some review bombing, possibly. But you'll end up getting a solid average of what the movie's actually going to be versus Rotten Tomatoes. There's 100 critics reviewing a movie, yeah. And they're the gods of whether someone has a career or not.
Unbelievable. I trust IMDb more than anything else.
It's pretty sad.
IMDb, Letterboxd, and then I look at the Rotten Tomatoes audience score now. I don't even care about the critic score. I just care about the audience
score. But it's sad that producers and studios aren't even looking at the movies they've made. They just look at the scores on Rotten Tomatoes versus checking the movie out.
Yeah, it's I mean, how about if you make your own decision in your opinions, is this director good or not?
Yeah.
Based upon your fucking job.
But it's also a like
it's numbers game.
It's also connected to the fact that a lot of audiences, they see the Rotten Tomatoes score like, oh, even we bring up Rotten Tomatoes often.
Yeah, the social influence of it.
But yeah, the effect of it on people and the masses can't be denied, but that's unfortunately happened.
Yeah, unfortunately. Oh, well. Man, that's weird to hear.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we got some really cool news. Scorsese and DiCaprio are collaborating once again. They have been trying to make a Frank Sinatra film for almost 20 years now.
20 years!
It's been a project they've been trying to get made forever just because they've required a high budget of like about $100 million, so nobody wanted to greenlight it. They finally are potentially moving forward with this film and hopefully can get it made very soon. And it's been announced that Jennifer Lawrence will also co-star in the film.
She'll play the wife of Frank Sinatra. And Very Leo cool. would obviously play Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
So it's not confirmed. Scorsese is attached to multiple projects right now. He's going to make his Jesus Christ movie.
This has been on his IMDb page for 10 years.
Yeah, but this is the first bit of news we heard about it in a while. And I guarantee because of his relationship with Apple, I bet he gets it done with the streaming platform.
And plus, Killers Flower Moon got like 10 Oscar nominations. Yeah. It did really well.
I think Apple will give Scorsese whatever he wants anytime.
Yeah, man.
Let's move on to another very cool trailer. One that we didn't get to talk about because, again, we were away traveling, so we missed movie news last week. But Trap. Latest M. Night Shyamalan film starring Josh Hartnett looks awesome. This movie is a vibe already. I love the trailer because it's very unique. It's about a father who's played by Josh Hartnett treating his daughter by taking her to a Lady Raven concert, a massive pop star in the world. Taylor Swift, basically. But there's a twist, and one that the writer-director is hiding. Well, not really, actually. That the father's actually a serial killer.
It's a great concept. And
the whole concert has become, it's a trap for the cops and the police and agents to catch the killer because they know he's going to be at this concert. So the whole concert, according to the trailer, is a trap for the father.
Yeah, I think it's a great setup, and Josh Hartnett looks like he's perfectly cast and is going to deliver a really cool performance. I love the idea of trying to entrap a serial killer in a public event because once the concert starts, he showed shots of SWAT and police barricading around the entire exterior of the stadium and the arena. And so I just think this is a really cool idea of you have an area where there are hundreds of police searching for the killer, but the killer knows that they're searching for him. They don't know that.
But the thing is, because M. Night movie, what's the twist going to be?
I think that is the twist.
I don't think it's the twist. He never shows the twist. I think there's going to be another twist.
No, I think that this is the twist. I think that he was like, let me show the twist early at the end of the first act.
I sort of have a theory.
What's your theory?
Of what the twist can be, but I don't want to spoil it in case it's correct.
Well, it's not a spoiler if you don't even know if it's true or not.
But if I'm right, then maybe it'll ruin the movie for people. So I'm not going to
tell me after.
I'll tell you after the episode.
It better be good.
It is really good.
You better be fucking good.
I think it's correct too.
Uh-huh.
It would make sense according to the trailer.
I think it looks great. I think it looks really good.
Yeah, M. Night's the man.
There's another trailer that we did not talk about while we were away in Boston, and that is Richard Linklater's upcoming film Hitman, and it just looks like an absolute blast. Good time, vibing. Action comedy.
Glenn Powell
sexy.
Co-wrote and stars, and he plays a journalist or a cop. Oh, no, he's a journalist going undercover as a hitman to try to catch people who are hiring hit people to kill others. and he does a bunch of different personalities. He's like a, he's like an actor, basically, doing different. He's pretending to be different kinds of and styles of hitmen. It looks hysterical and sexy and raunchy and fun.
I hope that they drop it at least in a limited release in theaters, Netflix, because I, after seeing this trailer, I was like, I don't want to see this in my living room. I want to see it on a big screen. It looks so much fun. Looks incredible.
Speaking of Alien, we have Alien Romulus. Some little bit of news. We found out recently that the film actually takes place before the events of Alien.
Okay.
So it was originally released that it was between the events of Alien and Aliens.
Yeah.
But I also read recently that it's actually before the events of Alien.
So are you telling me this is an origin story? Origins.
Maybe. I guess.
No, I doubt it. I think it's just going to be a separate thing.
Because Covenant's origins of the Xenomorph.
Because we've already got the
origins. So it's post-Covenant,
It's post-origins,
pre-introduction.
Pre-Alien.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. But also director Fede Alvarez, who they released an awesome trailer and we got a great look at Facehuggers and the Xenomorph, teased a little video on the internet where he is remote operating a practical facehugger, which is running around on the ground, and it looks sick.
It's amazing.
Its legs are running around. It looks so terrific. I can't wait to see how many of these facehuggers they have running around on camera, because do it in camera, baby. Let's make it practical.
Yeah, that's why the originals are so great. I mean, especially James Cameron setting up the facehugger with them trapped in that hospital bay room.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite horror scenes, man. It's so good.
Yeah, I think a lot of directors understand that practical effects make your movie timeless.
Fuck yeah. Absolutely. All right, next up, there was a huge trailer that dropped, and it's Deadpool and Wolverine. We actually did an entire episode reacting to the trailer, breaking down the Easter eggs and giving you guys our thoughts and predictions for the film. If you want to check that out, that came out last week.
Also, Rebel Moon Part 2
dropped.
What's the rest of the title? Like, I don't remember. I still haven't seen
Scargiver.
I still haven't seen Part 1.
Scargiver.
I thought that was the first one.
It's the next Scargiver.
Maybe it is Scargiver. And it is being met with critical disappointments and audience disappointments. It's getting destroyed online. And, you know, they're going to make another one of these. It's going to be a trilogy, but people are not really enjoying these movies, Rebel Moon Part 1 and Part 2.
This is the Scargiver.
All right, Scargiver. I haven't seen Part 1 yet. I was going to wait until the rated R releases come out before I watch these movies. But honestly, because of audience reaction and critical reaction, I don't know if I will watch the rated R versions when they get released.
I mean, Rebel Moon 1, I really struggled to get through it. I did not like it. And then this one, I have no interest in seeing it, honestly, because I don't think that it really set up that captivating of a second installment. Like, the first film ends and we're about to go into like a huge battle, and so this film is like that battle. And trust me, it's not like any Helm's Deep setup or anything. It was just very meh. And I'm not gonna watch this film just because I didn't like the first one. And yeah, it's just not that great of a...
Yeah, it's too bad. Yeah, because I love Zack Snyder's movies, but I think he's best when he has a theatrical release. I think that's what we're learning from him.
Yeah. But
because he made some of the best action movies of the century.
He's made
you can't
really
deny
great
that. 300, Man of Steel, yeah. Come on.
300 is my favorite of his.
It's one of the best action movies made this century.
It's awesome shit, man. This one, not so much.
Let's talk about another trailer that we didn't chat about because we were away. Maxine, the year of Ty West continues, everybody.
It's another year
of
Ty West.
It never ends. The year of Ty West never ends, Anthony. We got our trailer for Maxine, which picks up with Maxine after the events of the film X, starring... I'm blanking
on Goth.
Mia Goth. I don't know why I just couldn't think of her name right now. Mia Goth. Can't wait for this movie. Ecstatic about it.
What I immediately thought of within a few seconds of seeing this trailer, and I was like, this is like a Brian De Palma callback and then a Dario Argento Giallo movie callback. It just felt like Deep Red. It felt like Body Double and Blowout.
Slasher.
Yeah, it was just like 80s slasher, and I was so for it. And it was so cool. And even like the villain feels like a De Palma slasher villain, whether it be from Dress to Kill or Blowout, you know what I mean? So I really can't wait for this. It looks really exciting because I love those kinds of movies, and nobody's really done it in the contemporary landscape any time recently that I can think of.
It is in a tour-looking film. It looks excellent. I cannot wait. The aesthetic, the tone. Let's go. Ty West, the year of your life continues. The year of Ty West resumes.
I'm going to get you a t-shirt that says the year of Ty West.
You should, man.
That would be great.
The year of Ty West. I would wear that regularly.
Most people on the street would be like, what the fuck does that mean?
Listeners understand.
Oh, yeah. They would get it.
The year of Ty West never ends.
We got a new trailer this week from another Shyamalan. M. Night Shyamalan's daughter, her debut film, The Watchers, just dropped its first trailer starring Dakota Fanning and a bunch of young up-and-coming actors. The actress from Barbarian, isn't it? Georgia, I can't remember.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah, I can't remember her last name. Georgia something. She's fantastic. And this is a very much keeping in the family tradition, mysterious horror film. Seems to have a high concept and a big twist that we won't find out until we see the film. It looks interesting, pretty decent, pretty cool cinematography, and mysterious enough to entice me to go see it. And Dakota Fanning, obviously super talented, so I'll be looking forward to seeing this film.
Let's talk about Harry Potter, baby.
Yes, finally!
Harry Potter news. It's been a minute. So Harry Potter will once again come to life with over 100 voices on Audible. This is really cool news. So Warner Brothers is teaming up with Audible to record 100 different actors for voices to bring the movies to life. And basically, like we talked about earlier, you get to select which actor or actress you want to read the book to.
Yeah, it's really fun. And I think that's a great concept to have actors play all the roles and to have different choices for what kind of voice you want to have narrating the books. And
yeah,
this, I think, is just another way to get people excited to reinvest into that story.
They're also going to use and work with Dolby Atmos with sound design,
nice.
Have dramatic scoring,
oh.
And obviously different voices and actors coming in there with real world capture.
Thank you.
Now,
finally.
This is really cool because I really like audiobooks. I've listened to quite a few over the last several years.
Yeah, because you can't read, so.
And some of them are just someone talking.
Yeah.
Stephen Fry and his Harry Potter versions are great. There's a little music here and there.
He does some impersonations.
Yeah. He does different voices for the characters. But I've listened to audiobooks that have extensive sound design and production design. We have, you know, scenes with, you'll hear wind, you'll hear rain, you'll hear some music here and there. So I think just the style and production of audiobooks has just been getting drastically more improved and more sophisticated, actually approaching it like a production. It's really exciting, and it adds so much to the feel of listening to a book. So I'm really excited to hear what kind of sound design and sequences they do for all the amazing scenes that we know and love.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to make it more of a theatrical audio experience as opposed to just someone reading.
Yeah.
So I think that it could be like, in a way, ironically, going back to the days of theater on the radio.
Yeah.
In the radio, 1920s.
People were glued to the radios. Yeah. They've always been glued to something. The radios, people were glued to. I was talking to grandma about this when I was home. She's like, we were glued to the radio. Yeah. We all had our favorite shows, programs, and whenever they were on, you were just hyped. You were like ear to the radio, tuned in.
Let's go.
But yeah, I think it's really awesome. It's interesting how everything's kind of full circle.
Yeah.
Podcasting and audiobooks are now just taking over that spot.
And
of
the
radio.
Podcast films that come out now.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
Things never change.
All right, we have
some
two.
Some things do change.
Two.
Some things never
some
change.
Some things never change. I remember you used to dance, Niobe.
Some things never change. Some things.
I can't remember. We just tried to quote
Matrix Revolutions. Revolutions.
Reloaded, Anthony. Matrix
Revolutions.
Reloaded. No, it's Reloaded.
Both. It's both.
This is before.
They say it in both.
It's before Morpheus gives a speech. The one we're talking about is when he's.
But they say it in Revolutions too.
But
at the end.
But what we're quoting is Reloaded in Zion before the big dance party. Before after Morpheus gives his speech, he comes off and he says, "I remember you used to dance."
Yes, that's true. Exactly. That's what you quoted. I first quoted the Revolutions one that they do at the end of Revolutions or halfway through. And then you referenced the Reloaded version of the quote.
And then for some reason, Naomi is in the new one. Some things never change.
I'm so old.
I'm Captain Naomi.
I'm 180 years old. Why did we make this movie?
Oh my God, so lame. We got two massive delays at Sony Columbia Pictures. First of all, Kraven the Hunter, which was delayed 10 months to October from last year, has been delayed again to December 2024.
You turned into Jerry Seinfeld.
What's going on with these delays? Why can't they just release Kraven the Hunter?
Jerry Seinfeld over here.
It's
Kraven
ridiculous.
Brought it out.
It's insane. And also Karate Kid. The reboot.
Yes, Jerry Seinfeld right
Jerry,
now.
The Karate Kid, which was supposed to come out like this year, is not coming out until May 2025 now. So two massive delays and pushbacks for Sony.
Well, I'll give Karate Kid some leeway. They haven't even fucking shot it.
Yeah, okay.
They're still casting
it. But Kraven, they filmed a year and a half ago.
Yeah. It'll be over 2 years. And I've never seen, in recent memory, a comic book film pushed back this much. Can you think of? I can't think of one.
That actually filmed?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, after I mean, filming. Blade's been pushed back a year, basically 2 years. But
they probably filmed this, what? They filmed this it'll be over 3 years after they filmed it.
Or our buddy did stunts on it a year and a half ago.
So they filmed it in spring and summer 2022.
Yeah.
And this is going to come out at the end of 2024?
Which
almost 3 years.
I'm sure they did a bunch of reshoots. It's insane this keeps getting delayed.
No wonder why Aaron Taylor-Johnson signed on 28 years later franchise.
I don't think he's worried about his Well, I mean, he's just signing on to stuff because he's a hot star right now. He's hot.
He's
hot. Disappointed. He's like, when's this movie coming out?
We know he's hot.
We know he's hot. Insane. Just fucking make the movie.
Fucking A, guys.
Holy crap. You have as much money as you need.
Guys, it's not even going to do that well. It's not going to do that well. Just drop it. Just release it. Get it over with. Pull the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
All right. So there's a Russell Crowe exorcism movie that came out last year called The Pope's Exorcist. I actually liked it. It was a fun little exorcism movie.
Russell on a little moped. Yeah,
on his little Vespa. It was great. I enjoyed it. He's in another exorcism movie this year. he plays a troubled actor whose life begins to unravel while shooting a horror film.
And he plays a priest in the horror film.
He plays a priest in the horror film, and he starts getting possessed.
It's like they shot it at the... Like, hey, he's in a priest outfit. Let's just film something else while we're here.
Hey, Russell, you want to shoot something like on the weekends? That's also what it looks like, because it does not look good. Pope's Exorcist, even if you didn't like it, it looked good.
Yeah.
Great cinematography, production. Overall, very good-looking film. This film does not look that great at all, and it just looks cheesy and cringe. I was very underwhelmed when watching this trailer. At first, I thought it was a sequel.
Me too. I saw the poster. Is it a prequel or a sequel?
Yeah, I saw the thumbnail. I was like, oh, they make a sequel to The Pope's Exorcist? But this is not a sequel. It is not.
Speaking of priests, there's another priest movie coming up. It's called The Ritual.
Priests and nuns, man.
They're hot, man. They're hot this year.
Can we have a horror movie that doesn't involve priests and nuns, please?
Last year was Italy. This year's priests and nuns.
Oh, my God.
Hollywood is just...
Jesus Christ. So trends.
It's called The Ritual. Al Pacino and Dan Stevens will be playing priests in this horror film. It follows a pair of priests with Stevens questioning his faith and Pacino's trying to overcome a troubled past as they shove their differences aside to help a young woman.
Dan, I got troubles in my past.
I don't believe in God anymore.
Let's exorcise this demon.
Obviously, there's going to be some sort of horror part because it's called The Ritual, which is, you know, it's a horror film. So priests, the church,
so
horror,
hot,
nuns,
so hot.
It's on fire right now.
It's scandalizing right now. Here's a horror film I'm really excited for. Elizabeth Moss said in an interview recently that The Invisible Man 2, it's very close to happening. This is actually 4 years after the first film came out. I love that movie. Invisible Man is a really fantastic contemporary adaptation of the property and story. It was phenomenal, original, great subtext in there. I enjoyed the film so much. One of my favorites of that year. It could have been I think it was my favorite of 2020, honestly.
Well, I mean, 18 movies came out, so.
That's true. Nobody even remembers the Oscars that year. But it was phenomenal. I loved it. I've seen it 3 times. That's how much I just think it's a great horror film. So I'm really excited. If you haven't seen it, it is well made to have a sequel.
It was really good. Was that the year where there was like 17 people in attendance at the Oscars and they all had like tables?
They did it at the train station, the Union Station in LA.
That's right.
Yeah, it was like 14 people at the Oscars.
That was a weird show.
It was a weird show. What a time, man.
Oh,
this film,
God.
Luckily, Invisible Man came out 3 weeks before the lockdown happened, so it did make some good money. It made close to $200 million at the global box office. It would have been a massive hit if COVID didn't happen because it was chugging along really well.
It's still insanely profitable.
Yeah, very profitable film. They did a really good job with it. Tiny budget of, I think, $4 to $7 million, really small budget. It's a fantastic movie.
I really liked it a lot.
So I would love a sequel.
Me too. There is a new biopic being made about one of the greatest comedic actors of all time who left us very soon in his career, in his life. Chris Farley biopic is getting made.
Choose the version, biopic or biopic, man. Just choose one.
Biopic.
But is that what you're going with?
Biopic.
Biopic, okay. Stick with it.
Biopic. So this biopic will star Paul Walter Hauser, who actually was rumored to be the lead of the movie critic last year. And it will be directed by Josh Gad. I think this is awesome news. Chris Farley is one of the funniest comedians and actors, I think, to ever live. I think he passed away when he was like 33 years old, 34 years old. But he is such a legend. One of the greatest cast members of SNL. One of the greatest comedic actors in cinema, with only being in like 10 movies tops, something like that. I mean, he's a legend just from that short career he had. Beverly Hills Ninja,
Tommy Boy, oh my God.
I mean, the guy is so funny.
Have you seen the coffee bit SNL skit?
Which one?
He's at a nice Italian dinner with his wife in the restaurant, and they have coffee after dinner, And then the waiter comes over. He's like, by the way, you did not drink caffeinated coffee. Believe it or not, it was actually this like brand of decaf coffee. He goes, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why would you do that? And he just attacks everyone in the restaurant.
Oh, man, I can't wait.
That's one of my favorite SNL bits.
His style of comedy was so great. Just like the massive freakouts, the yelling, the absurdity.
The energy.
He was a genius. Yeah. He really was. But yeah, he was gone way too soon because can you imagine the movies he would have made if he still was with us?
Yeah, I think he would have been huge, man.
But I think this is a great idea. I've been dying for, I've been wanting to see a Chris Farley biopic for a while. Mm-hmm. I think we brought up a few times, like, someone should make a movie about Chris Farley because he's that good.
We talk about that every day.
Every day. We're going to live in a van down by the river. All right, let's move on to another legacy sequel.
You all were asking for this one.
We've been dying for this one.
This week's legacy sequel is...
we should have some music this week. Legacy sequel is...
Princess Diaries 3, confirmed by Anne Hathaway in a recent interview.
Finally!
We have been dying for this. Princess Diaries, the franchise, continues.
Oh, my fucking God, man.
Who's the actress in it? Julie Andrews, right, plays her... like aunt or something, right? The queen or something. I'm sure she'll be back too.
We have a directorial debut trailer release for an actress, Zoe Kravitz, directorial debut called Blink Twice. Now, this is the movie that was called Pussy Island originally, right?
Yeah.
So this one, they filmed a couple of years ago, and I've actually been wondering when it's going to get released. And they just released a trailer starring Channing Tatum. It's about a tech billionaire who basically learns...
Another tech billionaire.
Another evil tech billionaire. Who learns...
It's become a film genre.
It's a trend.
It's a film genre now.
Evil tech billionaire. There's like four a year. I mean, the Hemsworth one last year.
Knives Out. Yeah. So many.
So Channing Tatum plays the tech billionaire who lures some innocent people to an island for a little getaway, but it turns sinister. Blink Twice trailer. Check it out.
Not as good as the title.
Blink
Pussy
Twice.
Island.
Blink Twice. I like Pussy Island way better.
Yeah.
I think they should have stuck with that.
Yeah. The studio's going to lighten up. Like, people. Yeah.
Like, Pussy Island's a great title.
It's a good title.
I would see that just based on the title.
Yeah.
There's going to be an island, there's going to be pussy. That sounds great. Sounds like a good time.
Oh, my God.
That's good.
All right. Let's take a segue. Quick, a huge turn over to Lord of the Rings.
I think there might still be pussy here.
Pussy Island to Lord of the Rings. Those two words have never been uttered in the same sentence before. Lord of the Rings is going to be releasing, for the first time ever, 4K restorations of the extended editions of each film this upcoming June 8th, 9th, and 10th. So you can return to Middle-earth in theaters with a beautiful, high-quality, high-resolution restoration of the films.
I will be seated. The 4K restorations have been looking great at cinema releases because we saw the Pacific Rim 4K restoration.
Great.
It looked amazing.
And the filmmakers often are involved in the restorations, so yeah. I'm sure Peter Jackson helped on this for sure.
Absolutely.
Because
he's basically an expert on restoration because of what he did with his World War II movies.
Yeah, and basically what's happening here is, like, these were made before the digital era, so they were released on film projection. And so when they have done releases, it's been Blu-ray versions, HD versions, which can still look good when they're properly posted on. But this is like a high-resolution restoration of the film that the filmmakers are putting their final touches on to make it feel and look like the original release on the high-quality film format.
Going frame by frame by frame, making sure everything gets
looks right.
Terrific.
Yeah.
And
terrific.
Terrific.
It's terrific.
It's going to look so goddamn good. Moving on to Face Off 2, which remember we talked about this last year happening?
Yeah.
It's actually happening. Confirmed by Travolta and Cage, who will both return somehow.
Why the fuck not, man? Why the fuck not? How do you get him back?
I don't know, man. He maybe survived.
I guess he could survive that.
Yeah.
Hey, man, they took a guy's face off.
Yeah.
And put it on another guy. And nobody asked questions about the entire body difference.
Yeah. 90s, man.
Hey, it worked, man. We watched this a lot.
Yeah.
This is one of our favorite movies
take
as kids.
Face off. Face
I want to take his face.
What a weird, awesome movie. All right, let's move on to something else. So Elsewhere, which is a vampire horror video game,
is
getting a film adaptation starring Lakeith Stanfield, Now, this movie, I mean, this video game came out in September last year. It's become a success. It takes inspiration from Max Payne games. With retro graphics, it follows a vampire hunter tasked with stopping his vampire ex-girlfriend's evil schemes.
Ah, cool. Okay, this game looks pretty cool. I'm down for that. I love Lakeith, whatever he wants to do. Let's go. All right. Aaron Sorkin has announced in an interview that he's actually been working on a sequel to The Social Network. And he said he's been writing this movie that could serve as a sequel to the original film. And he broke the news during a live Q&A from DC edition of The Town podcast. And it's going to, what he's working on is writing a script about how Facebook and social media, not just Facebook, but all of social media, have influenced democracy in the years since 2010. He said, I quote, I'm tying Facebook and, among other things, tuning its algorithm to promote the most divisive material possible, which is things we talk about often. You know, the extremes are always blasted out online, and that's a big issue. And it's all at the will to increase engagement and the repercussions that has. He said they call it inside the hallways of Facebook the infinite scroll. And there's supposed to be a constant tension at Facebook between growth and integrity, but in reality there isn't. It's always just growth. And if Mark Zuckerberg woke up tomorrow morning and realized there's nothing you can buy for $120 billion that you can't buy for $119 billion, he would say, so how about I make a little bit less money? So looks like an interesting take. I doubt that David Fincher would return to direct this, but we'll see. I mean, it's Aaron Sorkin.
It's interesting. And then if Jesse Eisenberg came back to play Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
I wonder. But he's a very smart guy, and I'm sure the writing will be very nuanced. So we shall see.
Yeah. I mean, I've never needed a social network sequel.
Me neither. It's interesting. It's an interesting idea. Let's move on to some awesome news.
This is great.
28 Years Later, of course, is going to be the second. Wait, no. So this is the same film.
Are you okay?
Yeah. So the 28 Days Later franchise is getting a new trilogy. Obviously, we've talked about how Killian is returning, Danny Boyle is returning, and Alex Garland are returning for the first film. But also, joining the cast are Jodie Comer, Aaron Taylor Johnson.
I don't think he's okay, guys.
And Ralph Fiennes.
Okay, they released the cast of 28 Years Later. Jodie Comer, yeah, that's how you say it. Aaron Taylor Johnson and Ralph Fiennes. They're the actors.
And Killian.
In 28 Years Later.
I don't know why. Thanks, Jim. I thought they were different projects for a second. Sorry about that, everybody. Let me reprogram. Software update. All right, Anthony, take us away with the last bit of news.
Take it away. Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, has officially gotten a bloody rated R rating for violence, which is the news we really wanted to hear.
It's expected.
Yes.
I mean, Mad Max Fury Road also was rated R, wasn't it?
I don't think so. It could have been.
Let me check.
I'm not totally sure.
Actually, I'm not 100% sure on that.
Because there's not really any gore in that movie.
Not a lot of blood, you're right. Mad Max.
But this one says a bloody rating for violence.
It's Radar.
Radar?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, sick. Okay, let's get it. I don't want a PG-13.
Yeah, remember we were talking about how, we've talked about in our episode how big of a success it was for a Radar film.
True.
It's up
true,
there
true.
For yeah. most profitable.
Yeah. There is a lot of blood in it, actually. He's a blood bag. It's a bit of blood.
Quite a bit of blood. Yeah.
Lots of violence. So much violence.
I can't wait. I'm very excited about this film. Can't wait.
Comes out soon, man.
Anything else we got to talk about?
That's it. It was a lot to go over this week, and we're glad that we're back into our routine. I know a lot of you didn't know what to do with yourselves last Sunday without us.
So many unsubscribed comments.
We got a lot of comments.
It was really funny.
It was actually very endearing.
Yeah, it was nice very sweet.
We're so happy to hear that we've become a part of your Sunday routines to catch up on the movie news so you don't have to read through all the articles. You don't have to go on all the websites, so we handle it all for you.
Plus, you get a couple of good jokes in there.
Yeah, we can roast James all episodes.
You can roast me anytime, but I mean, I got some good ones in there too myself. Not roasting you, but just good jokes.
Oh, yeah, you're a funny guy, man.
That Pussy Island joke.
Pussy Island is good.
That shit slapped. Don't forget to stay tuned for our...
Maybe don't say that sentence again.
I think I'm a little too old for that. A little too old to say that. But again, Tuesday we're launching our crowdfund campaign for our new film, One Click. Definitely check it out. It's going to be on posting on all platforms, and we'll be chatting about it and trying to raise the funds by the end of May, which would be incredible. And again, we're going to blow up a car, so if you want to watch us do that, then help fund the film, as well as check out all the really cool perks that you can get.
And if you want to see James riding on top of a car as a stunt, check out the video.
The video campaign I did go on top of a car.
He did he on top of a moving car.
Don't worry, Janice. I was strapped in.
He was professionally hooked into that car.
Professionally.
Juno did it.
Juno did the rigging. All right, thanks everyone for tuning in. We appreciate you all so much. Have a great weekend. Check out all the re-releases and new films this week, and have a great one.
See you next time.
Thank you for watching Raiders of the Lost podcast. Be sure to hit that subscribe button, hit the like button as well, notifications for sure. Listen to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere you can listen to podcasts, and be sure to check out this other content we have on our YouTube channel.